but she did not finish. He glanced at her. She knew what he saw in her face. He turned away. She saw a faint movement of his lips like the release of a breath that he was forcing to function. She dropped her glance, her arm falling against the side of the car, as if her hand were suddenly too heavy for the weakness in the crook of her elbow. The road grew darker as it went higher, and pine branches met over their heads. Above a slant of rock moving to meet them, she saw the moonlight on the windows of his house. Her head fell back against the seat, and she lay still, losing awareness of the car, feeling only the motion that carried her forward, watching the glittering drops of water in the pine branches, which were the stars. When the car stopped, she did not permit herself to know why she did not look at him as she stepped out. She did not know that she stood still for an instant, looking up at the dark windows. She did not hear him approach, but she felt the impact of his hands with shocking intensity, as if it were the only awareness she could now experience. He lifted her in his arms and started slowly up the path to the house. He walked, not looking at her, holding her tight, as if trying to hold a progression of time, as if his arms were still locked over the moment when he had lifted her against his chest. She felt his steps as if they were a single span of motion to a goal, and as if each step were a separate moment in which she dared not think of the next. Her head was close to his hair brushing her cheek, and she knew that neither of them would move his face that one breath closer. It was a sudden, stunned state of quiet drunkenness, complete in itself. Their hair mingled like the rays of two bodies in space that had achieved their meeting. She saw that he walked with his eyes closed, as if even sight would now be an intrusion. He entered the house, and as he moved across the living room, he did not look to his left, and neither did she, but she knew that both of them were seeing the door on his left that led to his bedroom. He walked the length of the darkness to the wedge of moonlight that fell across the guest room bed. He placed her down upon it. She felt an instant's pause of his hands still holding her shoulder and waistline, and when his hands left her body, she knew that the moment was over. He stepped back and pressed a switch, surrendering the room to the harshly public glare of light. He stood still as if demanding that she look at him, his face expectant and stern. "Have you forgotten that you wanted to shoot me on sight?" he asked. It was the unprotected stillness of his figure that made it real. The shudder that threw her upright was like a cry of terror and denial. But she held his glance and answered evenly, "That's true. I did."
"Then stand by it."
Her voice was low. Its intensity was both a surrender and a scornful reproach. "You know better than that, don't you?" He shook his head.
"No. I want you to remember that that had been your wish. You were right in the past. So long as you were part of the outer world, you had to seek to destroy me. And of the two courses now open to you, one will lead you to the day when you will find yourself forced to do it."
She did not answer. She sat looking down. He saw the strands of her hair swing jerkily as she shook her head in desperate protest.
"You are my only danger. You are the only person who could deliver me to my enemies. If you remain with them, you will. Choose that if you wish, but choose it with full knowledge. Don't answer me now. But until you do..."
The stress of severity in his voice was the sound of effort directed against himself.
"Remember that I know the meaning of either answer."
"As fully as I do?" she whispered.
"As fully."
He turned to go, when her eyes fell suddenly upon the inscriptions she had noticed and forgotten on the walls of the room. They were cut into the polish of the wood, still showing the force of the pencil's pressure in the hands that had made them, each in his own violent writing. "You'll get over it, Ellis Wyatt. It will be all right by morning, Ken Daniger. It's worth it, Roger Marsh." There were others. "What's that?" she asked. He smiled. "This is the room where they spent their first night in the valley. The first night is the hardest. It's the last pull of the break with one's memories, and the worst. I let them stay here so they can call for me if they want me. I speak to them if they can't sleep. Most of them can't, but they're free of it by morning. They've all gone through this room. Now they call it the torture chamber, or the anteroom, because everyone has to enter the valley through my house." He turned to go. He stopped on the threshold and added, "This is the room I never intended you to occupy." "Good night, Miss Taggart."